Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. And we are joined by, well, at least chronologically, our final guest. I don't know how we're going to release these, but Kelly Griswold is the CEO from Ona. Kelly, thanks for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you so much for having me here and for letting me wrap this up for you.
That's cool. So, Kelly, you know, what brings you to Legal Week and, you know, how are you going to use this event to interact with customers or potential customers and, you know, gather new ideas to bring back with you?
Yes. So Legal Week and coming to Legal Week, I have three objectives usually. First and foremost is it's a great opportunity to interact with customers and partners and kind of like get that live feedback in terms of trends in the market and how they're using your product and how the two things can intersect. So that is absolutely the primary goal for me of coming. Secondarily, I think just what's the buzz? What are people doing? It kind of helps you get like that injection of innovation in the legal tech industry. And then for us, our team is, we're fully remote. So it's nice to have events like this to come together, build a sort of a community across the organization. And this has been a great event for us to do all three things.
Excellent. So there may be listeners that aren't familiar with Ona. Can you give us kind of a high level of what you do and who your typical client base is?
Sure. So unlike a lot of legal technology, our customer base is primarily enterprise or corporates. It always has been, and that's probably because of what we do, and that is that we're managing data with a focus on internal collaboration apps, and we are able to collect and integrate with those data sources to establish live connectivity and data transformation. So all of that data in Ona becomes ready to search and discoverable to power downstream workflows like litigation requests, early case assessment, investigations. It's interesting at this conference, as I'm sure you've had lots of conversations about, it's, you know, AI everywhere all at once, that's all everyone's talking about. Well, I don't have any flashy Gen AI announcements for you. Part of that is because like we really believe it's about the data. And so what we have done for our customers for years, which is manage their unstructured data, is what we believe will continue to be a necessary enabler of a lot of future innovation in this space.
Yeah. We can really tell it's the end of the conference because they're breaking down and there's a guy that's got a radio that keeps walking through. So if you hear that's what it is. So we'll power through.
It's color sound.
There we go.
You know, you're here with us.
We could turn the podcast into a dance party.
There we go.
Make it extra interesting.
It's like, I mean, I know like enterprise, I mean, that's always been a challenging area. I mean, you know, and very time consuming. So, you know, what is it that you bring to the table for your clients to improve that process?
Well, it's really about it's about the data. And what we came to the market with a focus on the enterprise. And that sits sort of upstream of a lot of the workflows that your law firms or service providers are offering to customers. And what I mean by that is that most enterprises, they want to manage their own data and then find what they need from that to then go downstream from there. They want to have that access, control, and visibility into their data, and they want that themselves. And that's really the challenge that we've been solving ever since we formed the company, you know, years ago. So that's, I think, what's helped us crack that enterprise nut is that we're taking workflows that have historically been very kind of transactional and linear, which is I need to get information from my data. I'm going to first collect it, and then I'm going to process it, and then I'm going to review it. And really a better way of doing that is investing in building a data foundation so it's there when you need it. And then you're skipping to step sort of three or four. And that's something that's a value proposition that is much more acutely realized by enterprises who are avoiding that sort of downstream cost by being able to have much better visibility and control over their data.
Yeah, we were joking, and I have said it many times this week that we had that 25-year-old overnight problem of, wow, our data is really not great. And every time there seems to be this advancement in technology, whether it's database structures, whether it's large language models as it is now, we go back to that problem of, boy, our data is really crappy.
Yeah.
And so, how do we fix that? Do you see, I know this is something that Ona's been doing for a while, do you see there being a much more intensive focus on gathering the data and structuring it in a way that the new tools can be used?
The short answer is yes, but I think we're at the tip of the iceberg. I think that what we are seeing from our customers is the trend and the noise around Gen AI has maybe taken some of the discussion out of how important your unstructured data is and building that data foundation. So this trend of companies now need to have control over and visibility into all of the data in their collaboration applications for, you know, e-discovery or other use cases, that kind of started in 2020 and it's been emerging really fast. So this sort of data and application proliferation inside the enterprise, people are talking less about it. It doesn't mean it's less of a challenge. And so we're talking more about generative AI. And last year was the year of experimentation. This year is the year where companies are looking to implementation. And you talked about that like age-old problem. So the ones who have moved from experimentation to implementation are pretty quickly circling kind of back to basics. And they're like, oh my gosh, garbage in, garbage out. What I really need to be doing right now is not tinkering with a bunch of large language models and fine-tuning them and whatnot. It's about figuring out how I get my data in order and then how I can use that to sort of more transparently and sustainably adopt these new technologies that I now have access to drive meaningful outcomes for my company.
Yeah, clean up first, do the process, clean up first and then start the experimentation.
Yeah, and I think, we're not starting from square one here. There have been companies, not just Ona, but many companies in this space that for the last 10 years have taken this kind of, peer-to-peer adoption tooling that's hit the enterprise and helped build governance around that. And a lot of these technologies can be applied to what we're now trying to do with generative. But I think on the positive side, there's this halo effect where everybody's talking about it, but it's bringing awareness into some of these fundamental investments that, like, you're finally realizing there's more value to you carving out the time to making.
Tell us about some of the big accomplishments for the company. What are some of your goals, on the agenda for the upcoming year or two?
The thing that I'm proudest of is, at the company is we have amazing customers. And so we're trusted by some of the, largest and most recognizable enterprises to manage, really important data for them for really important matters. And I think it's a testament to the technology and the value that it adds, and also a testament to, like, we have a really good team. And we have a team that our customers rely on and like to work with. It's the combination of those two things, being able to trust the technology and then trust the people that you're working with that help you not just, solve the first problem, but also build and add value into the next few that you're going to be tackling. And so I think that that Ona just does a really good job of that, and I'm proud of it.
I mean, do you have advice or thoughts on sort of how to sustain or create those types of trust relationships? Because, I agree with you. I think that that's critically important in terms of doing business and working on projects, that there's got to be a good feeling between the parties.
Yes, I think it definitely comes back to accountability and setting the right tone for partnership and really technology, especially in the legal industry, where we didn't all grow up as technologists. Like, some of this is new for us. And understanding and appreciating that and having empathy that, like, sometimes technology breaks and we're going to work through it. Because if you're just, you're adopting something that's really complex in the back end, if you're just going to expect it to be seamless the whole time, you're probably going to be disappointed. But then at the other end of that, being able to get in front of it and then work through issues and challenges that, as they come up, and really partner collaboratively, you know, sometimes that's on the tech side and sometimes that's, you know, a customer coming to you and saying, I just really need your help with this thing. And I know it's outside the scope of what your software is providing me, but how can you help me work through it? Those are the conversations that build that culture. And at the end of the day, just knowing that we're accountable for providing our customers with an experience where they're getting value from the product and standing behind that.
Now, I know we talk a lot about generative AI and AI and technology, but you know, there's other things that are going on in the market as well. And in fact, the two of you both were down in Miami back in December at the TLTF conference. And so there's a lot of private equity and venture capital that's coming into the legal tech market. You know, they're looking at clients, products, technology side of the industry. Finally, it seems all of a sudden like there's a lot more attention in this area. So, you know, what are you seeing that's affecting how maybe you approach the business needs of your clients and others?
Yeah, well, certainly I think that it is wonderful for the industry to see private equity and venture capital come in industries where it's been buoyed by capital, innovation accelerates. And this industry has been innovating for years, but it's, I think, really primed to kind of hit the next level of that. And this all comes back to the fact that it's the confluence of the prevalence of unstructured data inside of organizations. There's been a lot of innovation in tech around structured data, but the legal industry is uniquely positioned because we've for years been sort of processing and applying, you know, systems like TAR to being able to transform unstructured data sets into structured data sets that are able to be used with downstream capabilities. And I think that that's triggering a lot of the interest is that, okay, we have this very language-based practice of law, and we now have technological capabilities that can be married to this. Like, there's going to be disruption here. And I think at the TLTF summit specifically, there was a lot of like really interesting conversations about like, how do we put these recipes together? And where are you going to see the most innovation fastest? But like on one end, it's about like accessing and transforming unstructured data into structured data sets. And on the other hand, it's about like using these capabilities to marry this to workflow and automation that then is able to create really domain-specific outcomes on the other end.
Yeah, and I mean, the conversation was fantastic, although I you know, I sort of wonder when I kind of go back to my client base, it's like, is that going to be terrifying, you know, for them?
Yes. 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 It's going to be terrifying and also, I think, wonderful in certain ways. There's going to be a greater need than ever on people that think like lawyers about how we can ethically and sustainably use these technologies and where the best places are to apply them and how to make sure that we're doing that in kind of a risk-adjusted way. I think we've started to see some of that and more legislation around this and applying the expertise of that industry to that challenge, I think is going to be important. And then also just kind of putting it out there, like there are certain things that we as humans are uniquely capable of doing. And these are things that we typically like doing. The parts that technology automates may not be like the highest and best use of our time. And so I'd love for this to be an advancement where we're getting back some of our human time and giving away some of the things that are less valuable, but the change is terrifying. So I think that will be kind of a predominant theme.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to those trust relationships, sort of being able, you have clients, I have clients, kind of walking Greg has clients sort of, you know, walking them through this and sort of just explaining the hows and the whys and, you know, what the benefit is.
Yes.
And getting them comfortable with it.
Yes, exactly.
So now is the time where we do our crystal ball question. So what we do is we ask you to put your crystal ball in front of you and tell us about like what challenges or changes or trends that, you know, we think that you think that you're going to see for the next maybe 2 to 4 years. And you can adjust that time frame if you want.
I think I'll go on the long end of that time frame. And we've been talking a little bit about, you know, how people are reacting to the innovation and the new technologies we've had over the course of this podcast. When I kind of take a step back and I think, what is the future going to look like? I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. And sometimes I take a step back and look at how they're interacting with technology. They don't type. Everything is, they're running Google searches, you know, voice to text, and thinking through, like, how are we going to be drafting a contract in, I don't know, maybe it's 3 years, 5, 10 years. I think that it will be about breaking down workflows, about automation, and about verbal and natural language communication. So my crystal ball has, you know, what we're going through and we're kind of, you know, populating workflows for CLMs to draft a contract. And maybe that's more efficient now because we have synthesization and summarization with large language models. But like, that's going to get trumped up with how this next generation is using technology. And where you could sit on a podcast and we could talk about, you know, the licensing rights to the podcast, and there will be a system somewhere that maybe we don't even see that asks us a number of questions and will generate a licensing agreement, and we in natural language will be communicating those things to a lot of the sort of pen and paper, hands-on keyboard work that gets done right now. And like, I think that that's where this industry is going, and that's going to be crazy.
It's going to be very exciting.
Yes.
Well, Kelly Griswold, CEO from Ona, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us at Legal Week.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much. And thank you, all of our listeners, for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found on LinkedIn or on X at GayBauerM. And on Threads at mgaybauer66.
And I can be reached on LinkedIn and on X at Glambert. Kelly, someone wanted to learn more about you or Ona. Where's the best place to find you?
Well, you can certainly go to our website at ona.com, O-N-N-A, and you can absolutely reach me on LinkedIn.
Terrific. And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you very much, Jerry.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Back.